Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
It's been a long day.
Oh, boy. There's a serious tone.
Nah, not really. Just a bit flat after that.
Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
Are you going to be all right? Are you going to be able to get through this, you think?
Well, I thought at the Firmino equaliser, I felt good. And I felt good about where Liverpool were at. But I was also aware that City were playing with an intensity and a... I don't know. The City played very well. And so did... I don't think Liverpool played badly. And that's where you're like... Ugh.
No, it seemed like it was a genuinely good game.
Mm.
Like a fun game. There was a lot of action. It seemed like it was played at a pretty high level, I would say. And like you said, you got that Firmino equalizer, but ultimately it all led to this.
Sterling in space. Found brilliantly, wasn't he? Leroy Sané, left foot. Oh, what a goal! Absolutely brilliant finish by Leroy Sané!
Yeah.
2-1 was your final. Manchester City jumped back into second place. Liverpool still 4 points out ahead. And I think that's kind of what you, I would say this to all Liverpool fans, that you do have to remind yourself. I know that that's a gut-wrenching loss because of the way that it went down, and we'll talk about some of the specifics of that. And B, I know you disagreed with this when I said it to you before the game, but I truly believe that if Liverpool had won today, and maybe even if they had gotten a draw, the league, it was over. That they had won, that they could have essentially wrapped up the league in my mind today on January 3rd.
Yeah, and they have not.
Right, now they have not. And they have allowed Manchester City some life. So I can understand, obviously, why a Liverpool fan would be, you know, pretty crushed at kind of missing out on that opportunity. But what you have to remind yourself is Manchester City included, there is not a club in that league that would not trade places with Liverpool right now.
No, absolutely. And that's the way to look at it, I guess. It's just you're so wrapped up in the... as a fan, you start... I couldn't look beyond... People were telling me, oh, we've got this good run of games after City. We've got, you know, where we should pick up points, etc., etc. And I'm like, yeah, but we've just lost to City. You know, I was so focused on this game.
Of course.
I mean... from halftime against Arsenal, because the Arsenal game was such a wash, you're already thinking ahead, and it just feels so flat now. And like I said, in the context of the game, it was a little bit over and back. I actually thought Liverpool, they weathered the early storm of City particularly well. I say storm, City didn't create a ton early on, although I thought they started the brighter of the two teams. And then Liverpool had that chance, that incredible Mane chance where it hits the post, comes back, John Stones rattles it off Ederson, and it somehow doesn't cross the line. And then I think City dominated probably the last 10 to 12 minutes of the half and score. And then you're worried because City come out with the traps hot in the second half, and then you get a quite brilliant equaliser. And you're like, oh, here we go. This is what we've been seeing from Liverpool. And it just never really kicked on. And as good as Sané's goal was, I couldn't believe the acres he found himself in. I'm like, is anyone getting across? And I know Aguero made an excellent run to kind of pull Trent Alexander-Arnold away. And I'm looking at Mane, and Mane doesn't get back. Mane is nowhere near getting back to cover. And I'm just... Ugh.
Yeah, especially too, you know, we talk all the time about American football. People always say, oh, it's a game of inches. It's a game of inches. It's such a cliche.
Yeah.
I mean, has that ever applied more to anything than this Liverpool-Manchester City match today when you talk about, inches? That's not even doing it justice. Centimeters, millimeters away from scoring that goal like you talked about, the John Stones, Ederson.
I think if
incident.
That goes in first, Liverpool would have deservedly had the lead. And I think that it would have been interesting to see how City would have reacted. Now, how did City react to the equalising goal? Excellently. And I think the Delph principles that we talked about before It really did come to the fore. You can talk about the tactical approach of City, which I thought was very good. They kept the two fullbacks of Liverpool occupied, and Sterling against Robertson really gave Robertson something to do going the other way. He wasn't allowed to maraud forward as much as he would have liked, and that was really good from Pep Guardiola. And I thought, you know, there were good innovations by both managers in the game, but the real thing was that City, A, did not allow Liverpool the intensity. They grabbed and seized the intensity straight off. The early opening tackle by Fernandinho on Robertson was a case in point. He's gone right through. He's had a heavy touch and he's gone right through and he's left a marker. And Fernandinho was excellent, Andrew. He was really great. He reminded me of Roy Keane in that game. And that is high praise. He dominated that game. He drove City forward. He won the ball back on several occasions and broke up play and was excellent. And City did what I wasn't sure they could do under Guardiola, which was, it's not just about pressing or closing players down, but that aggressive turnovers that Liverpool was almost the mark of Liverpool against them last season. They didn't allow Liverpool to do it in this game, and that was crucial.
Yeah. By the way, going back to that opening near goal for Liverpool, the one that Stones managed to clear off the line, I know this is not the moment where you want to hear this, but as I was watching that, and when they showed like the actual zoom in that they do of the ball, of like just how close it was to not fully going over the line, I was just looking at that and thinking, like, in this world of like sporting innovations, like, is there anything that has been more beneficial to a sport than the goal line technology in this sport?
Nothing, because I'm sure that would have been given.
In the past, it
would have been given.
And it, like, and not just the fact that its accuracy is basically like without question, like nobody questions the accuracy of those calls ever. But it, like, the instantaneous nature of it, you know, I'm very, you
it's
know,
seamless. It doesn't affect
like,
anything.
You know how pro VAR I am, but I understand that like it can cause.
That's my whole point about VAR.
Right, that it can cause like a disturbance in a game, basically.
Until we can get the tech up to that level on many issues with VAR and offside.
Yeah.
Like, then
to me, the two sporting innovations that I think of, it's the goal line technology in soccer and like television in America finally putting the first down line in on television, however many years ago that was, to show you where the, like, those two things are the things I always think of, like, how do we live without, in a world without this? I mean, I was just so, like, to see how close that was. And then talking about game of inches, let's talk about both of the goals that Manchester City scored. You get one from Sergio Aguero where he just blasts it through just like the most impossible of angles, right near post, in between, you know, kind of like between Allison's hand and the post. The second goal, Sané off the inside of the far post. It was just like goals that I would imagine for a Liverpool fan to watch. That is just like, oh my God, these goals that they're scoring against us.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I don't think it really was. I think that the object of ire and of focus was Dejan Lovren on the City goal. Because don't forget, Allison made a brilliant save prior to that ball flying past him, and City were knocking on the door. And what happened in both scenarios, firstly, Lovren was ran down the line, he got pulled out, and it was a 1v1. Thankfully, Alisson made the save, and then the ball's recycled, it comes out and it comes back in again, and Aguero ghosts in front of Lovren, and he doesn't react, or he doesn't get across. Because, Andrew, honestly, when Lovren is getting that ball there, that's where you don't tackle, but you have to get a block in. And Lovren was nowhere close to him.
I saw in one of the match reports, you know, I know sometimes these rankings are different, but a couple of them, I think I saw they gave him Lovren 3 out of 10.
And it was his misplaced header on the breakaway too, I believe, for Sterling.
I guess this would be a moment where I would make fun of him for having called himself the best defender in the world. But you know what? I'm going to be the bigger man today. I'm not going to mention that he said that, and we're going to move on.
I also think the fullbacks on the Sané goal. Okay, maybe not on the Sané goal. Certainly on the Aguero goal. Liverpool got stretched, and the last thing you wanted was for Dejan Lovren to be in direct opposition to Sergio Aguero, or anyone really. You wanted that nice and tight and compact. It's been about masking Lovren since Gomez has been gone.
And I
don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but it has been that case because he's not a natural partner for Virgil van Dijk. And look, even at the Arsenal game, one thing that was crucial for Liverpool today was this. When City pressed, you need your floated ball into the midfield or into that area behind the press mm-hmm. to be really accurate. The Arsenal goal at Anfield came from Lovren giving the ball away like that. And I never felt that either defensively, in terms of actual straight up 1v1 defending, Lovren was going to be up to it tonight. And I worried about his passing out of the back to create opportunities to get down the field. And if you look at it, Andrew, the amount of times that the Liverpool ball, both from the goalkeeper, I must admit his kicking wasn't great either, but from Lovren to break that press. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
That clipped ball over the top.
Right.
That's got to be good, and it never was.
The amazing thing, you talk about Liverpool's defending, and I don't want to sit here and bash it overall. We can talk about Dejan Lovren. But, JJ, I was just thinking about this. So they gave up two goals tonight to Manchester City in this 2-1 loss. Do you even remember the last time Liverpool gave up more than one goal in a game?
It was last season, wasn't it?
Well, no. You think they've gone this entire...
No, in the league.
You might be right about
focus
in the league.
Focus on the league here, come on.
Okay, well, because I... Well, overall, it was PSG who beat them 2-1 in November in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I mean, this Liverpool defense, it's why they're in the position that they're in. There were the questions about it last season. Then they brought in Virgil van Dijk, and Joe Gomez asserted himself, and Alexander-Arnold asserted himself, and you're left with this team that still has this potent offensive attack, but you couple that with what they bring defensively, yeah. plus Alisson, and it's why they are top of the table by 4 points. But you're right, if you start removing pieces from that, van Dijk can only do so much.
Right. And obviously, the midfield three of Milner, Henderson, and Wijnaldum was picked to be a little bit more conservative because he had more offensive options than that and he didn't choose to use them. And I was hoping that they would do more to kind of cover the fullbacks or try and screen that the centre half position, but it didn't really work out that way.
I thought it was interesting what Pep Guardiola said after this match. There were people, you know, I said before that I thought this was basically a title decider. And look, Liverpool may still go on and win the title. I think if you looked at it right now, they probably would still be your odds-on favorites to do so. But this felt like that was it. And there were people, yourself included, that said, no, you can't say that. There's still, you know, 18 more games to play. But Pep himself said after this match that Manchester City treated this as though it was a cup final.
You could tell.
Yeah.
The way they flew into challenges. How many times were there tackles in the last ditch? I think there was 3 off-the-line clearances by City tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, that was serious commitment. Although, with one of them, Ederson comes for a free kick. I honestly, the goalkeeping tonight from Ederson was, I thought at some stage he's going to do something and we're going to capitalize on it. Andrew, when a cross goes into the box, he reminds me of Bruce Grobbelaar back in the day. He'll come for a ball he has no right to get to. And one of those fell to Firmino, somehow cleared off the line. But City's commitment was huge. I've actually made a note here, 55 minutes, indicative of City play. I'm reading my
this
notes.
This is what you wrote in your notes?
Yeah, 55 minutes, indicative of City play. Salah, who was broken away on the right-hand side of the Manchester City penalty box, surrounded, and it was Leroy Sané who wins it back. There was a heck of a lot of work, and there was an awful lot of, I'm sure, Pep's guys talks were really intense, and he pretty much got this team into a state of mind where they knew they couldn't lose.
And you're starting to once again see the thing that we talked about with Manchester City before the season that hasn't quite emerged yet this year, but maybe it's starting to. Their depth, I think, Kevin De Bruyne did not play in this game. Riyad Mahrez did not play in this game. Yeah. Kyle Walker, who's one of the most expensive fullbacks in the league, did not or came on as a sub in this game. Gundogan came on as a sub in this game. Like Gabriel Jesus did not play in this game. You're starting to kind of remind yourself that
they've spent millions and millions and millions across the whole every position.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is funny because we talked about last week how, but then when Fernandinho misses a match, it's like they're a different side.
They couldn't have won that game tonight without him.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I really don't think they could have. He was He was excellent. Now, I should say Company was good. Generally speaking, Company was good tonight, but I think Company's career, I mean, he had to come off. He had stiffened up so much. He's struggling with that calf. You've got to wonder. And his tackle, he should have seen red for the tackle, in my opinion, on Salah. Uh-huh. And that was all because they did not, he could have no part of being in a leg race with Mohamed Salah. And he basically admitted as much. He had two options. Go to ground and try and upend the man and get the ball, or do something. Otherwise, Salah was straight in on goal. And I have to agree with Jurgen Klopp on that one. It's not me being biased. In the modern game, you cannot tackle like that.
Lunging two-footed challenges.
You can't do it.
Yeah. If they had given it, I'm sure Pep would have lost his mind.
Well, he did anyway.
I don't think I would have really sat there and said, what is the ref thinking? He's gotten that completely wrong. I think you'd have to understand why something like that would have been ultimately given.
Yeah.
So we have a title race.
We certainly do, sir. We absolutely do.
Yep.
There will be an interlude for the magic of the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. By the way, you have to bring that noise back.
I don't know where it is.
You're going to have to find that.
All right, relax.
When you do What to Watch For. It's been demanded already.
By who?
Man from Southern California.
Who?
A man from Southern California.
Do you have a name? I'm going to need a name.
Rob.
You made that up.
No.
All right, well, I'll find
it. He literally sent a tweet demanding it and also showing Ronnie Radford's amazing goal for Hereford United.
Oh, really?
Versus Newcastle.
All right, well, you know what? Now I believe you, and I will go back and I will look for it.
But yes, we have a title race, and everybody seems happy about that except me.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, you thought you could have won the league today. I wouldn't expect any Liverpool fan to feel happy about it, but you always talk about it. It's been 29 years, and here you are in pole position, well past now the halfway mark of the season. I was going to ask you another question before we move on from this. Where was I? Oh, Paul Merson. I was reading this at Sky Sports.
Merce. Merce say?
So here's what Merce said. I actually have the exact quote in front of me. This was before Liverpool Man City. I read this yesterday. He says this, quote, "If I was Liverpool, I would forget about the Champions League now. They have a chance of making history where they would all go down as legends after 29 years. They need to put all their eggs in one basket, being winning the league." Where do you stand on that as a Liverpool fan?
I said Gary Neville said that at the start of the season as well. Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay. And I don't know about it from the point of view of the way Klopp and Pep Guardiola do approach a lot of things. Now, do I think there will be players dropped for the FA Cup? For sure. But in terms of the Champions League, like, can you turn it on and off like that? Can you just decide, well, we're not going to play tonight, or I'm going to drop players and just...
Well, it's that. I don't think you tell your guys don't go all out.
I think you
make the decision for them by giving some of your key players
a
rest.
I can't see that. I can't see Liverpool going out against Bayern Munich.
No.
I can't see it happening. I don't think it's... I don't think it'd be acceptable at that stage of European competition to play that way.
Well, right, at this stage. I mean, look what happened to Brendan Rodgers when he rested players at the Bernabeu.
That was so wrong. That was so wrong. What was also wrong was that it was definitely Stevie G's final night at the Bernabeu, and he was on the bench.
Yeah. So you would, because I read that and I thought, first of all, I thought it was selling Liverpool's quality short.
Yeah, I don't like the message it sends to players either. And also, the association the club has with that competition.
With success in Europe.
They've won it more times than any other English club. Yeah. I don't think the fans would like it.
Well, I thought you'd be a little down today, and understandably so. But if I can lift your spirits, my holiday gift for you has arrived. I have it with me.
Wow.
Would you like it?
Yeah. Oh, God, I hope it's not another crushing disappointment on a day of crushing disappointments.
It's not exactly what I pictured when I ordered it.
Oh.
Here, let me get it.
All right.
It's not wrapped because I'm tacky.
And lazy, too.
Yeah, sort of. I don't
go for the wrapping.
No?
The gift bag.
Well, you already just showed me a picture of the gift. And by the way, where is my gift?
Time in my wardrobe.
Yeah, you walked in today and said, so, have you worn the sweatshirt yet? I said, it'd be hard to do that considering you haven't given it to me.
So much has happened in the intervening weeks. All right.
So here it is.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
It's a picture.
It's framed of your home.
Oh, wow.
It's like an old school map of Sligo.
That's actually really nice.
You like it? All right,
good. Oh, my Lord. It's even got the old school spelling of Sligo.
Yeah, with the E.
With the E at the end. There's Killarney, the Owen Beg River, Tubbercurry. And where I'm from is on it. Aconry.
Yeah.
And it's got even got mountain and lake maps. This is actually really good.
All right, good. Oh, I'm glad. I wasn't sure.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Because it's non-soccer, and you and I really don't have anything else to talk about or share in our lives
other
than soccer.
Such a dope. We talk about so many different things, even on this podcast.
That's
who are you kidding?
That's a good point.
Yeah, no, this is really, really good.
All right, good. I'm relieved.
Enniscrone, Kilglass. Wow. Yeah,
these are all places.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to have to tweet out a picture of this.
It's quite... I'm glad that it turned out good.
This is
you
good.
You can hang it up. You can prop it up like that, whatever you want.
No, this
it's
is really,
all yours now.
This is really good stuff. That's great.
You feel better?
I feel good. Can I just read you what I wrote in my match notes? JJ's match notes.
Mm-hmm.
Goal. TAA Robertson Firmino. And then I tweeted straight away that I haven't felt that good in a long time.
On the equalizer.
The burst of joy.
Where did you watch this?
I watched it in my office, in my cave. It was one of those, if I was in a bar anywhere near to anybody, it would have been.
How much work was achieved from roughly 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock Eastern time in your office?
A huge amount for the podcast. Huge amount.
Okay.
But it was that burst of joy.
Yeah.
Oh, it lifted me.
Yeah.
These are
the moments we live for. We chase those feelings.
Yeah, and I don't want to bring it to the bedroom. But when people say, that meme that was going around, I'm not saying it's better than sex, but, I mean, it's different. Obviously, it's very different.
Oh, yeah.
But that rush, that feeling, oh.
Primal.
I don't know where it comes from.
Every sports fan has felt that at some point.
Yeah.
Don't worry, you'll feel it again.
I know.
All right.
Anyway, look.
Well, yeah. So that's our look at what was the only game of the day, really. I know there were other games in other leagues, but that's the one we were going to focus on. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the festive period is now over. So we're going to look back and kind of assign our three winners, three losers, each of us have given to this like crazy time of the Premier League calendar. So we'll do that. Also, of course, we do have to mention Christian Pulisic. There's a reason we haven't talked about that very much up to this point in the podcast. We'll tell you why that is. Still plenty to do. Don't go anywhere.
It's time for Boy Wonder Why Christian Pulisic. Oh, that boy really is special.
Yeah, he really is. I wonder at what point, JJ, I was thinking about it. He's 20 years old now. I mean, he's almost a man. Boy Wonder Watch, at some point, I think, has to transform into Young Adult Wonder Watch.
It's a moniker. Therefore...
So he'll be Boy Wonder when he's 70?
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is still being described as the baby-faced assassin.
Well, because he has a baby face. Mm. Christian Pulisic is no longer a boy. He's a man.
If my child had the face of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in his 40s, I would be concerned for my child. I would say that child has weathered some.
By now, obviously, all of you listening are well aware of the fact that Christian Pulisic was sold from Borussia Dortmund to Chelsea for a record fee for an American player, $73 million, which is among, I believe, the eighth most expensive transfer in Premier League history, which puts him in with some pretty amazing company.
And he's the most expensive substitute ever to be brought into the Premier League.
You know, well, that does raise some interesting points. We're not going to talk a ton about this because I don't know if you guys listening have seen it yet or not up on both our Caught Offside feed or the ESPN FC feed, but we had Grant Wall in with us here in studio at Caught Offside Towers for an hour where we talked about almost anything, I think, that you as an American soccer fan would be interested in. Chiefly among those things, Pulisic's transfer to Chelsea. We talked with him almost half of the time was spent on that. So,
well, he's got great insight into Pulisic, having met him, interviewed him several times.
Some extensive time with him.
Yeah, knows him inside out. And we set the table. We laid out the landscape for U.S. soccer for 2019 with Grant.
Yeah, so I would not, and I'm not just saying this because you and I, because it's our podcast, but honestly, if you're an American soccer fan, if it was Joe Schmo and Pete Diddley that did the podcast, I would say you should probably, as an American soccer fan, listen to that.
Oh, it's your duty.
Yeah, it really is. So check that out. Like I said, it's on both our feed, the Caught Offside feed, and the ESPN FC feed. But I did want to at least mention a couple things on the move. I guess the overarching question that everyone has asked us about this is whether or not this is a good thing for him. Now, there's something I heard from Rizzio Sarri, which kind of caused me to raise an eyebrow and wonder about that question. Here's what Sarri said when he was asked about the transfer, Pulisic coming to Chelsea.
Are you looking to do any business in January to bring some new faces in, Maurizio?
I don't know. I didn't know anything about Pulisic yesterday. The club asked my opinion about him about 1 month ago. My opinion was positive, and today I knew, I have known that the deal is done, but I didn't know anything.
That doesn't sound like, I know he said they asked me my opinion and my opinion was positive, but I don't know, I listened to that and I was like, this doesn't sound like a man who's thrilled necessarily to have this guy on his team.
No, and or that he had full, how would you say,
autonomy?
Agency. Okay. In this signing. No, it doesn't. No, I know the modern game kind of operates at a different level, but it seems as if Chelsea are signing Pulisic and that's that. Make of him what you will.
Yeah. I would have thought you might get, you know, some sort of sense of, like,
by the way,
joy.
He wasn't asked about Pulisic. That's my, one of my concerns is he jumped.
Well, before that question, Pulisic's name was mentioned. I cut out. There was a lot of stuff leading up in that question.
Yeah, but he still asked, are you doing any more transfers in January? And he said, I didn't know, and used Pulisic as the example of how he didn't know what he would be doing, which is...
Yeah, it's important
now,
to
Now, it's
point
a weird
out.
Time at Chelsea Football Club, so there's a lot of uncertainty. And, I'd read that quote, and I thought, okay, well, this is a man who is just familiarising himself with English language. Mm-hmm. It sounds even worse when you hear him.
It's important to point out that Pulisic is now property of Chelsea, but he will not be joining them. He was then promptly loaned right back to Borussia Dortmund.
And you'd hope he'll play now.
Well, I don't really know what makes the most sense for Pulisic. Like, so what are Borussia Dortmund, like, what are their plans with this guy coming back there now? Like,
well, their plan is if Sancho or somebody gets injured.
I guess he's an insurance policy.
He's someone who can slot in, knows the system, and can play very well in it. And I'm sure that...
Is it not better for Christian, though? Like,
oh, for him, it's...
But Chelsea wanted... What I had read about this was that Chelsea wanted Pulisic to join them now.
Of course.
And he preferred to stay at Borussia Dortmund until the summer. And I just wonder, for him, wouldn't it make more sense to, like, get in now, even if you're not playing right away, just to get a head start and get acclimated? So once
Andrew,
get to the summer, you've already hit the ground running.
But slice it any way you want. He may not be a regular starter in the team. He is still a useful piece in a team that's in a championship race, is probably going to win the championship.
Wow, that's a big statement.
He'll want to be there.
Probably. Well, like I said, I don't want to go too deeply into this because we spend a lot of time on our other podcast today with Grant Wall talking about that. So make sure you download that.
So we'll do our festive winners and losers then.
So let's do that. We've got from this period of chaos, basically, where it feels like you're watching a big game every 3 days or you're watching your team play every 3 days. It's awesome for us. I sometimes wonder what players and managers think about it as other leagues are going on holiday breaks and things like that. So we've got our three winners and three losers, each of us, from the festive period, as they call it. We'll do our winners first. You want to start?
Yes. By the way, these aren't in any particular order in terms of, it's just 1, 2, and 3, right?
Yeah,
this isn't my number one winner.
Do whatever you want, all right?
All right. Well, because I'm sure you were, I thought we might be talking about Liverpool. I went in a different direction. And rewind to last season, I'm sitting on my sofa and I'm watching with regularity Marcus Rashford toiling out wide on the wing for Jose Mourinho, and I'm asking myself why. And it seems to be that Rashford is one of the early beneficiaries of the no Mourinho era at Old Trafford. Playing centre forward, his proper position, scoring 3 goals and an assist under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer already. Andrew, I had a heated Twitter debate, not heated, in, you know, a nice, cordial, yet back and forth with a couple of Man United fans not so long ago under Mourinho, who were like, I don't think Rashford's got it, X or Y. I'm like, look at where he's playing. He's got to be in a central position. He's got to play as a striker. He is one of the most talented young English players there are, and he was one of the main players at United who suffered under Jose Mourinho. I remember him playing right-sided midfield against Sevilla in the Champions League. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, all he had to do was be positive and put him in his right position. And I think Rashford has already been a winner and is going to go on and do well right till the end of the season.
Yeah, for my first one, I went a little more broadly than that, and I just went with Manchester United as a whole. So obviously, you know, we've talked about it at length. Since Solskjaer took over, 12 points from four matches. Only one manager in Manchester United history has won his first four matches in charge. Do you know who that was? It was not Sir Alex.
Matt Busby.
That's right. He, back in 1946, not the worst company for Solskjaer to keep. When he came in, Solskjaer, he said he wanted the players to be able to express themselves out on the pitch. The guy who you just mentioned, I mean, has that applied to anyone more than Marcus Rashford? It's been like night and day.
But it's
him.
So obvious. That's what's so frustrating. It seems like acts of self-sabotage by Mourinho.
Yeah. Even what you're starting to see from Romelu Lukaku. Two goals in his last two games. He had two in his previous 11 appearances before that. And that's not including the matches that he just didn't play in, whether it was through injury or whether it was through Mourinho just having no time for him. And then, of course, JJ, there's really, I mean, you talk about Rashford as a big winner. How are we not going to mention Paul Pogba and what's happened with him, this renaissance that it seems like he's undergone since Solskjaer's come in?
Yeah.
Under Mourinho, you have to admit, there were times when we were, and I would think even the biggest Pogba fan was starting to wonder, is Pogba really, is he as good as we thought? And I think now, like, there was always that part of you that wondered, is it Pogba or is it Mourinho? I think Pogba, in these first four games, to a certain extent, not fully, but he's kind of answering that question. I was being held back. Look what I'm capable of doing when you set me free.
Well, of the four games, his most recent against Newcastle, I would say was his least impressive, but that's a by the way comment.
Well, four goals and three assists in these four games.
Exactly.
Since Solskjaer came in, he was the team's player of the month for the month of December. Just think, what were we saying about Pogba during that Liverpool game when he couldn't get in off the bench under Mourinho? And now he's come in and he's player of the month for them.
But even at Southampton away, he was so bad. Like, he was a mixture of bad and you really had that question you said where you're like, what did I see in the summer? And what did I see in flashes over last season? Like, where is the real Paul Pogba?
Right. I think we're starting to see him. So, all right, you're number two winner.
On the 21st of November 2018, Alistair McGowan wrote a piece for the BBC with the headline, Gambling Firms to Review Number of Sports Betting Adverts After Public Concerns. He went on, the Remote Gambling Association, whose members include Bet365, Ladbrokes, Paddy Power and William Hill, said it was very mindful of public concerns. And then another piece in it, which just threw me away in this report was, or blew me away, was, and a further report on Wednesday stated that the number of children classed as having a gambling problem had quadrupled to more than 50,000 in just 2 years. Now, why am I saying all these things? My Christmas football, Andrew, was utterly dominated on television by advertising for betting companies. Every ad break, billboards on the sideline during games, I was exposed to the most incredible deluge of advertising of one specific form of product. I could not get over it. Even in the time since I've been home, say last Christmas for the really busy Christmas period, it's gone even further.
Wait, so who's the winner here?
The winner is gambling.
Okay.
There are losers everywhere. That's the very nature of gambling. More losers than there are winners. But I'll tell you, in football, the advertising side of things is utterly dominated now by one industry. I've never seen the like of it. Now, nearly 60% of clubs in England's top two divisions have gambling companies on their shirts. I wonder, with the new laws that are coming in New York State and in New Jersey, what's going to happen over here as well? Are we going to see the same kind of thing happen?
I bet we will. I mean, there's such a market for it, and yeah, I'm sure it'll
happen. I had to put this in. I had to shoehorn it in because I couldn't believe what I was watching.
My number two winner, it starts with a trivia question, JJ. Outside of the top six in the league, just one club has more wins than losses and a positive goal differential. Do you know who that club is?
No, I do not.
That's Leicester City. That's Leicester City.
Oh, Leicester.
Oh, Leicester City.
Let us remind you, they're the 2015-2016 champions. Vardy!
In the last week and a half, they've beaten Everton, Manchester City, and Chelsea. Sure, they did lose to Cardiff, but I suppose those things happen.
But Puel needs to be sacked.
That perpetually. Like, he's always just, he lives on the hot seat, even when things are actually going pretty well for the club that he's in charge of. Jamie Vardy has two goals and an assist over those four games. In addition, some of the vets, Vardy, Albrighton, there's a young core that feels like it's starting to emerge now with this Leicester team. Madison, Maguire, Chilwell. Wilfred Ndidi, I feel like, is not a young player. He's like 22 years old, I think. He's still a very young player. The challenge for them is going to be to keep these guys, because you know they're going to be in demand by the top six. And by the way, the three wins that I mentioned, they all had one thing in common, which is kind of a random thing. They were Hamza Choudhury's only three league starts of the season. And I think I might have butchered his last name.
Choudhury.
Yeah, that's right. He started out in Leicester's academy at age 7, and he's the first player of Bangladeshi descent ever to play in the Premier League. He's played for the England under-20s, I think.
Yeah.
Because he was born in England, but I think his mother is from Bangladesh.
And that is huge, because there is a huge Bangladesh, Pakistani population as well in England. And these players from that part of the world, or from that area of Asia, don't really break their way through for some reason, despite being such a big part of English life. Footballing culture doesn't seem to seep in there.
Yeah.
And so that is huge.
Yeah. So not a bad start to his time with the senior team in the league. And your final winner?
Ryan Fraser of Bournemouth. Christian Eriksen, Mo Salah and Leroy Sané have 7 assists each this season. Eden Hazard is joint top on 9 with the Bournemouth man, the wee Scot, Ryan Fraser. A meteoric rise for the 24-year-old, and it's crazy to think he left Aberdeen in the Scottish Premier League to join Bournemouth when they were in League One. That's how far back he's been with them. Now, he went on loan to Ipswich for a little bit, but he registered his 9th assist in the 3-3 draw with Watford at the Vitality.
What a game.
On Tuesday. Yeah. His goal rescued a point for Bournemouth, who've had a difficult Christmas, let's be fair. But Ryan Fraser continues, and has continued over Christmas, to be quite the player.
Did you happen to see the post-match interview from that?
Now, so, first of all,
yeah,
what do you think of having one player...
I love it.
...and one player from the opposition...
I think it's great.
...joint interview?
I love it. I think it's so cool.
His face was awesome.
So it's, for anybody who didn't see it, it's Troy Deeney and Ryan Fraser being interviewed together. So a player from Watford and a player from Bournemouth. And Troy Deeney does not hold back, with Fraser right next to him. And he basically talks about how Watford were jobbed. And he says the referee bottled it today.
Yeah.
And he just goes in on the referee. And Fraser is stunned to hear a guy talking about the ref like this. And you just see his face, his eyes just bulge out of his head as Deeney is like...
Also, he probably doesn't agree with it.
Well, probably not. He's saying, this guy is basically saying that we were lucky to get a point today. I want to punch this guy in the face. I enjoy those. I feel like there's like a weird camaraderie slash tension with guys from each team standing next to each other. I think it's like different, but kind of, I don't know, I like it.
No, I like it too.
Yeah. JJ, my last winner here, I'm kind of changing mine on the fly because I was expecting you to have Liverpool, but you didn't, but I feel like they need to be mentioned. So I have you and me as winners from this period. You first, because Liverpool, correct me if I'm wrong, but when the month of December started, they were, 2 points back of Manchester City for top of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now they find themselves 4 points up as we exit this period and head now into January. That's an amazing turnaround, one that I think a lot of people didn't see coming, and I don't mean that as a slight against Liverpool. I mean that as, you know, Manchester City are who they are. And for Liverpool to take advantage in the way that they did of Manchester City dropping points in back-to-back matches, I think it's huge for them. And now, like we said, they are in pole position. This is now their league to lose, whether you want to admit that or not. And then I put me in there as well, and I felt a little bit weird doing it after the Wolves match, but ultimately I'm trying to keep some perspective here with Spurs. And I know people are saying, oh, Spursy Andy. But hear me out.
That's what they're saying.
In the month of December, Tottenham achieved qualification to the round of 16 of the Champions League. getting a result in Barcelona, reached the semis of the League Cup by beating Arsenal in a North London derby, and moved up from fifth to third in the table, and possibly, maybe, kind of, sort of find themselves on the fringes of a title race. Obviously, the disappointment against Wolves is hard to get past, but look, it's just not a club that's going to win every game. They are going to lose against some teams that you think they should beat, and Wolves is a likely candidate, knowing how Wolves play against the top six. So you look at the bigger picture, you see the positive results, you see upward momentum, you see them playing fun football. And so I say, overall, that game aside, I have really, really enjoyed these last few weeks of them. So I think you and I came out of this as winners.
Yeah, we're the real winners here.
What about the losers? Would you like to go first?
Yeah. Sat down on New Year's Day to watch Everton-Leicester in what, on paper, to my mind at least, was a tasty offering. Mm. I was hungover. And so too it appeared were the 22 men playing football. It was a dire game at times, and Everton were virtually indistinguishable from the last days of Koeman in a performance devoid of creativity or competence. And the competence is a big thing. Now, Leicester weren't great, but when Theo Walcott's misplaced header was bumbled, I love that word. It's the only way to describe what Michael Keane did.
I thought that was more on Keane than Walcott.
Oh, Andrew. Yes, obviously. Oh, okay. He should still... But it's a terrible header.
There was so much power on it.
Like, why has it gone that yeah. way? What's wrong?
Are you sure it wasn't on purpose? Because it was right at Keane's feet. And Keane just, like, then made a mess of it.
There's no way that could have been on purpose.
I watched it so many times that I was trying to determine if Walcott meant to do that or not.
Or he has extra corners in his head. That it's just gone off at that angle. Bumbled by Michael Keane, and Pereira pounced with a lovely ball to Vardy through to score. You knew, Andrew, there was little or no chance of Everton rescuing this. One win in eight for the Toffees since the crossbar tackle Jordan Pickford at Anfield.
Oh, man. They
were wretched in back-to-back defeats away at Brighton and home to Leicester. Now, it's not working out for me with Keane and Zuma at the back. He dropped Seamus Coleman and put in Jonjo Kenny. That didn't work out. Andre Gomez got the curly finger whipped out of the game. Sigurdsson as a number 10, not convinced by it. I don't think it's working out. And Richarlison looks jaded, looks a little bit tired, and he needs to be more central instead of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Look, it's early days. There were boos at full time there. Yeah. The Everton fans aren't happy with what they're seeing. Silva deserves time. But they have spent money, maybe not so much under Silva, but money. Well, yeah, actually, money has been spent.
Under him? Who was he really brought in that was with a really high price tag?
Bernard. I need to check how many of those are loans. But, you know, he has been able to bring in players. Yeah. And I'm not convinced with what I'm seeing.
I don't know. I still like him, and I still like what he's trying to do there, and I think he's trying to figure out who he can move forward with and who he has no time for.
Yeah, that's
for.
Probably true, too, but right now, it's not good, and it's not good to watch.
It was a rough stretch for them. There's no question about it. My first loser, JJ, basically for all of the opposite reasons that I gave for Manchester United's success, is Jose Mourinho. You know, it's like when sometimes you can learn a lot about somebody when he's no longer at a place. Like when Peyton Manning left the Indianapolis Colts and they went like 1-15. You were like, well, I always knew Peyton Manning was good, but oh my God, like he was really scary good. Like, look at what they are now. Look at Manchester. I mean, like the change in Manchester United was just so profound. From one day he's there and they're dire. The next he's gone and they're really fun to watch and they're winning games like it was nothing. So I felt like I had no choice but to put him on this. I mentioned Rashford before. You know, a young player, promising, playing for his country, but being held back at club level by Mourinho. Rashford specifically, 14 appearances under Mourinho this season, 3 goals and 11 shots on target. 10 fewer appearances he's had under Solskjaer, same number of goals, just 1 fewer shot on target. Like you said, he's a different player. Yes, I'm aware it's been against Newcastle, Bournemouth, Huddersfield, and Cardiff, but it's been by an aggregate score that they've won of 14-3. 14 goals in 4 matches. JJ, they scored 14 goals in Jose Mourinho's last 9 matches total in charge. Remember, this is a club that lost to Brighton. They lost to West Ham. They drew with Wolves. They lost to Derby County on penalties in the Carabao Cup. Barely got past Newcastle at home. You couldn't take anyone for granted when it was Mourinho's Manchester United. So the change has just been, it's just been so dramatic. I have to make him one of my losers. Who's your next one?
Newcastle United.
Oh.
Sometimes you just need Newcastle legend Alan Shearer to sound off on his club, and he makes some really interesting points in this for BBC Radio 5 Live.
I was at Anfield on Boxing Day, and I looked at our team then. 20 years ago, when Newcastle had those classic games against Liverpool, the 4-3 games, which everyone talks about, I looked at the midfield and I looked at the forwards then. Newcastle then, 20 years ago, had a £5 million player. They bought David Batty for around about £5 million. Their midfielders at Anfield on Boxing Day were Hayden and Diarmi, which cost around about £5 million. I looked at the centre forward they had that day. 20 years ago, they paid about £6 million for Les Ferdinand. They had a £6 million forward on Boxing Day in Yoselu. So that tells you exactly where Newcastle United are.
You hear that and you're almost shocked to see them playing in the Premier League.
Yep, you are. And Benitez's demeanour over Christmas has been pretty low. And he believes they'll be relegated if they can't make changes in January. And there is very little faith that Mike Ashley will spend. Newcastle fans are writing to Ashley en masse to ask him to please spend money because they know which way this is heading. And they are 2 points off Southampton in 18th. They've done amazingly well to be even where they are. I don't know, man.
I worry for them. I can't believe that Benitez is still there.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's contracts, Andrew, and he's every right to see his out, but I think they're heading for the
trap. Well, I don't blame him. I'm saying I would have thought that he would have just either resigned, but I guess he wants to collect his money.
No, and he has a commitment there because he's been taken to the bosom of that city and he has done some escape artistry, particularly last season.
Yeah.
But it's bad. It's really bad.
Let's see. My second loser, JJ, is the Arsenal. Lost to Southampton on December 16th, then got eliminated from the League Cup on the 19th. Bounced back, did beat Burnley 3 days later, but then drew with Brighton and then got hammered by Liverpool before ending this period with a win over Fulham. Fans are getting restless there. They booed Unai Emery the other day when he subbed off Alexander Lacazette for Aaron Ramsey. And then did you see what happened? Lacazette got on the fans. He pointed to his head, basically trying to signify to the fans that they need to think before they boo. So Lacazette was fine with the sub. Ramsey came on and then scored almost immediately. Meanwhile, Mesut Ozil's future seems uncertain. Now, both Ozil's team and Arsenal's team or Arsenal's management both say he's not going anywhere in January, but they're going to meet during the summer and kind of assess what his future looks like. Is he in Unai Emery's plans? He's on a reported $350,000 a week.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God. And
sometimes he's not in the squad. He's on the bench.
Right. You don't know when he's going to play. Right now, he did come back for a couple games, but now he's out again with a knee issue. I don't know. It just, for a club, like, you just think about where they were at the start of December in that 4-2 win over Spurs, and they're flying high, and you think about where they are now, and it's amazing how much things can change, not just like empirically, but just like morale, how much it can all change so quickly. So that is why I do put them as one of my losers of the period. And your final one?
Wolves versus the teams they told you not to worry about. Wolves have beaten Tottenham and Chelsea in December. On Tuesday, they lost to Crystal Palace. And this is following a trend. They've also lost this season to Huddersfield, Crystal Palace and Brighton. Now, there's no question this team is a talented team. There's also no question that it is a fairly expensively assembled side and that some of these players maybe have aspirations of playing against those high level teams that they do so well against, but I'm not going to quote stats or anything because I watched it myself, so I know they lost to Liverpool at Molineux before Christmas, but the chances they created, the intensity with which they played with, was notable until Liverpool pulled away with that second goal. And then I watched them draw 1-1 with Fulham away. And the disparity in the way they played, they didn't look like the same side. In fact, if anything, it was down to Fulham's prolificacy that they didn't just blow them off the field, in the first half in particular. And so the manager, Nuno Espirito Santo, has to do something with this group and say that you're not auditioning for these sides you're playing against. You know, you've got to put in the same level of intensity and application against these bottom eight teams.
Who's that on? Like, is that on him to, like, is it his responsibility to get them up for games that maybe are a little bit more difficult for players to get excited about?
Well, I mean, it's always the manager's responsibility in that regard to prepare and to have them ready.
But, like, it's kind of just incumbent on these players. Look, you're paid very handsomely to go out there. Like, this isn't just you versus Chelsea. All right, like, there's more than just the top six in this league, and you need to be a professional. Show up for work every day, regardless of who the opponent is. Like, I go back and forth on whose responsibility it is.
You look at some of the players they have: Elder Costa, João Moutinho, Nieves, Jimenez. Got to pick it up.
Yeah.
They just really do, because there's times when I watch them and they are just playing brilliant football against really good sides. And like I said, I mean, the performance against Chelsea, particularly in the second half, was superb.
Now, look, I feel a little bit guilty getting on them, because if you're a newly promoted side to the Premier League, what's mission one? Stay up.
Right.
They're ninth right now.
They are, but are they a newly promoted side in the sense of other newly promoted sides? They are not.
Right.
They are very much a different project.
Yeah. My final loser here, JJ, I actually feel terrible about this one, because you know he's one of my favorite players in the league, and that is Wilfried Zaha.
Oh.
I adore him, and it kills me. But he's in the midst of actually a quietly brutal scoring drought. He scored 3 goals in his first 4 matches of the season, but he hasn't scored since. He's 0 for his last 31 shots, which is among the worst scoring droughts right now in all of Europe, if you look at across the big leagues in European soccer. And you know what else happened at the start of this festive period, JJ? What we talk about all the time. The streak has been broken. Palace finally won a game in which Wilfried Zaha didn't play when they beat Leicester City 1-0.
Sell him. Get rid of him in January. You don't need him.
He received, I don't know if you saw this, but he received an outrageously lucrative offer, I think from a Chinese club, that he turned down. But there is some concern now at Crystal Palace as to just how much longer he is going to remain a player on that team.
This summer, I would imagine.
Me too. But he did. I think the Chinese offer was, I forget exactly what the number was, but it was substantial. So there you go. That is our 3 winners and losers from the festive period.
You should contact us with your winners and losers at COSoccerPod, cutoffsidepod @gmail.com.
You can also contact us. You have contacted us in the last week or so, and that is why we have a mailbag.
We do have a mailbag. Do you know what? I'm going to skip, because we talked about Manchester City and Liverpool at the top of the podcast, so I'm going to skip those emails. At COSoccerPod, cutoffsidepod @gmail.com. Abe Rupert kicks us off. I'm an Arsenal and US fan. Is there a caught offside protocol with Pulisic signing at Chelsea that can help my very confused American brain?
Yeah, I'm dealing with a little bit of that too, with the Tottenham-Chelsea rivalry as well. Look, it may not sound like an easy thing to do, but you compartmentalize it.
Yeah.
And American fans, we talk about this on the Grant Wall podcast, so we do it all the time. There's guys that you love on your college team that then get drafted to a team that you despise, but you continue to like that player. And look, this is the nature of soccer, where international soccer means so much. Like, you've got American players that you love that sometimes aren't going to play for clubs that you love, but we love him. And I will always root for him to do well. I will not root for Chelsea to win, but I can still root for Christian to perform at a high level, and we're all going to have to learn to do that.
At Glenster, I've had a soft spot in my heart for Reading since they were last in the Prem. I don't know why, really. If their upcoming FA Cup match against Man United had been a few weeks ago, they might have had a shot. Now, I just have to beg for mercy. Reading, of course, are second from bottom in the Championship. Mm. And they face a rejuvenated Manchester United.
I used to enjoy them a little bit because Bobby Convey played for Reading, he was a young American kind of like star in the making who didn't quite, I think, realize his potential.
And the goalkeeper, Marcus Hanneman.
Yeah, although I always associate him more as a Wolves player.
Yeah, but he was at Reading first. He made his bones at Reading.
I'm just telling you. Also a very accomplished, I think, helicopter pilot.
Really?
I believe so.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
At Set the Panda, curious on old Spursy Andy's take on Adrien Rabiot rejecting a move to Tottenham because they are below him.
I'm actually annoyed with you, because I think he is below this podcast, and I had no intention of even mentioning that D's name on this show.
Wow.
Oh, JJ, when I read it.
Gundling and D-rant.
When I read it, JJ, I was like, don't, all right. I saw like the tweet with the quote, and I just had to say, don't throw your computer out the window. Don't throw your computer out. I was so angry. It just like something about the smugness of that comment. I just wanted to say, who are you? Like, what have you achieved to be talking this way? Like, get out of here. Get off my timeline. Go and get nowhere near my club. I want no part of you on Tottenham. It struck a chord with, like, whatever, you know, I suffer from an unbelievable inferiority complex. And he just, bang, he punched it, like, the center of that complex.
As if he was crafting a comment to hurt you specifically.
Just the smugness of it, and just for some reason, like, it coming from a guy that, like, I don't know, you're a good player, fine, but, like, you're not Neymar. Like who... Oh, I was like, oh, I hope he goes to Arsenal. Like, I want him now where Tottenham can play him. Like, I want Eric Dier hard into those tackles. I hope he goes to some other club in the league. Oh, I want to see him twice a year, JJ, and in cups.
You need to see your therapist twice a month by the sounds of things.
I'm almost annoyed that we got that tweet because I was not going to mention his name. Mm-hmm. And I have no intention of ever mentioning it again. You know how I made my list for U.S. soccer? We hadn't talked about it in a while, but after the U.S.
Those who have wronged us.
Right. Those who have wronged us list episode of the podcast. If I started one for Tottenham, right at the top.
Can you stop hammering the table?
Rabiot, right at the top.
Okay.
Done with him.
At Joel Bruns. Great win for Fulham. So that was...
Wait, when was this from?
December 30th this was sent. So that was the win over Huddersfield, yes.
The Sessegnon goal.
On next pod, please explain penalty kick etiquette. It's not etiquette. It's your manager telling you who the penalty kick takers are and you adhering to that. How did Kamara just rip the ball away from Mitrovic? Isn't the manager yelling on the sideline who's to take it? Very much so. Claudio Ranieri was hugely upset. Kamara ripped the ball away from Mitrovic and then proceeded to miss the penalty. But thankfully, Ryan Sessegnon scored, and that was three valuable points for Fulham. But there is no etiquette. What Claudio Ranieri said afterwards was when Mitrovic is on the field, he takes the penalties. If Mitrovic wasn't there, then Kamara would be next in line. But you don't just take it into your own hands. And you've got to score.
Oh, we saw it with Milivojevic and Benteke.
That's right, yeah. Ben Berger.
Nice name.
Yep. Just came out of They Shall Not Grow Old. Really glad you discussed it on the show last week. Incredible movie.
Yeah. I saw it as well. It was, I'm glad, very glad that I saw it. I couldn't believe how many theaters were sold out. I mean, I had to get deep into my, like, list of theaters around me. I had to go to Astoria to see it. I don't live in Astoria anymore. It was pretty impressive.
I would say the trailer was so excellent that I'd say it sucked in a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I'm going to get to see it now.
I'm sure you'll get a chance.
The search continues. And finally, Alan Shearer. Newcastle United striker.
Yeah, I know
record Premier League goal scorer. England international. So I'm sitting at home. I better give the background to this. Sitting at home and I'm watching Match of the Day in Ireland, which I don't get an opportunity to do because I live in America. And Gary Lineker, we've just watched Fulham and Huddersfield, the aforementioned game, and Gary Lineker drops a lovely Kill Claudio Shakespeare reference from Much Ado About Nothing. Because Claudio Ranieri had said, I wanted to kill Kamara. So Lineker goes, it cuts to Lineker back in the studio and he goes, oh, Kill Claudio, which is a line from Much Ado About Nothing. And he goes, certainly wasn't much ado about nothing there.
Good for him.
Which wasn't, I mean, it was a bit clunky. It didn't quite work. And neither Danny Murphy or Alan Shearer reacted at all. There's about a millisecond awkward silence and then Lineker pivots to the game.
Because they probably just didn't know.
Right.
I don't think I would have known.
So I tweeted this.
Oh, here he comes on his high horse.
At Gary Lineker drops a lovely Kill Claudio Shakespeare reference from Much Ado About Nothing on Match of the Day, and he gets nothing from Alan Shearer and Danny Murphy. And I wrote, Philistines. Now, that was clearly a joke. I don't expect...
Cretans.
I'm not exactly sure what they should have responded to, but I was teasing. I was teasing.
Yeah, I mean, what are you looking for? One of the, like...
I'm not a good mess.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's a drop. When Craig Shakespeare was manager, guys, we did a lot of Shakespeare references. It was
low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, and it was
glory.
A daunting search. So Alan Shearer is on almost directly after the show ends. It's 11:30 p.m. And he tweets this. He tweets this, he goes... I always preferred the tragedies. Wait for this for a burn. You better have this ready. I always preferred the tragedies. Having heard your podcast, seems the same applies to you.
Oh! Got him.
The burn. Got him. Wow. Wow. So I obviously tweeted back. What I'm interpreting from this tweet is that Alan Shearer listens to the pod.
How about that?
Yeah. But no, I was like, why is he being so narky? Like that
oh,
was...
Oh, come on. He's just having a joke.
Yeah. But I looked at his timeline and he literally fielded about 10 tweets from people who were just crushing him on his analysis. His analysis, I thought, was really good. I enjoyed listening to him talk about the games. But it's so tough over there because it's so tribal. He gets accused of bias on an almost minute-by-minute basis after match of the day.
You know I'm a delicate flower, and I'm not offended by what he said at all. I think he's clearly kidding.
Oh, it's brilliant because he's tied in Shakespeare's tragedies and our podcast.
Yeah.
That's really, really, really good. So that was the mailbag.
Nice. What to watch for? FA Cup, JJ. It's an FA Cup weekend. Friday, 2:45. I can't find it. I'm sorry.
What?
I've done a search, and I can't find it.
You can't find the magic
noise.
Why
would you not have said this to me before the show? I'm trying to do the podcast. You see me, like I engineer it basically in front of me. I'm trying to find drops on this massive page of different things. I can't find it.
How are you typing out an FA Cup what to watch for, and the thing you don't think of is the magic noise?
You're right. I dropped the ball, okay? What do you want to do? So what do we stop the show now? That's it. Go home, everyone. Stop listening. God in heaven.
Okay.
FA Cup, Friday. Now, we'd say the magic because this is the magical round.
This is where the big boys enter and play against
so
the minnows.
For my what to watch for, I have only tried to identify matchups that put together, like you say, real minnows and giants
in
some sense. Friday, 2:45, Tranmere Rovers and Tottenham Hotspur.
The third team in Liverpool.
Tranmere currently ninth in League Two. Just a quick course. I've got like little tiny tidbits on some of these little teams here. From 2000 to 2004, actually, Tranmere reached the FA Cup quarterfinals three times, and they went to the League Cup final in 2000. Then they fell out of the Football League.
That's right.
Like a catastrophic plunge. But now they're back, and they welcome Spurs to Prenton Park. In the playoff last year, to get themselves back into the league, they went down to 10 men in 48 seconds into the non-league final, the playoff final. I'm sure they were terrified, but they managed to win that 2-1, and they are now back in league football. This match will earn Tranmere £500,000, which I'm sure for them is
huge,
massive. So good for them. That's Friday, if you get a chance to check that out. Saturday, 10 a.m., Lincoln City and Everton. Lincoln City right now are top of the table in League Two. And if you see that name and you're thinking, that sounds familiar. Where have I heard that? Well, you may remember 2 years ago they went on a little bit of a run in the FA Cup. They knocked Burnley out at this stage.
That's right.
Yeah. Saturday, 12:30, Crystal Palace and Grimsby Town. Grimsby Town, 13th in League Two. They've won six of their last eight in all competitions. You know, JJ, who once managed Grimsby Town? He has a connection to your club, I think.
Go on.
Bill Shankly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know who their biggest rival is?
No.
Hull City, but they haven't met in a league match since the late 80s. And they haven't played at all since 1998.
It's a Yorkshire derby, then.
How do you, like, it just seems funny to me to continue to be rivals with a club that you just simply don't play.
Oh, but that is a regular thing.
I know. I mean, we see it with, like, you know, in the South Coast, you see it with Portsmouth and Southampton.
Yeah.
You've seen it now with Newcastle and Sunderland. Yeah, it's very regular, but it's weird to me.
But the thing that you hang on to is the hate, which is important.
Sunday, 9 a.m., Fulham and Oldham Athletic. Oldham are 10th in League Two, looking to reach the fourth round for the first time since 2012-13 when they lost to Everton in the fifth round. JJ, on Wikipedia, you know who is identified as an Oldham Athletic fan?
No.
Paul Scholes. Supporter of Oldham Athletic. In fact, Scholes actually admitted to wanting their managerial job back in October of 2017, but lost out to Richie Wellens. Over the weekend, by the way, on NBCSN, speaking of Paul Scholes, I watched it was basically Gary Neville sitting down with Scholes and just watching like Scholes' greatest highlights. I thought it was tremendous.
Oh,
I really enjoyed it.
Gary Neville's Soccer Box.
It was great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
You know what one I recommend for you? What's Gary that? Neville was sitting down with Robbie Keane.
Oh, yes, done.
Oh, my God. And some of the goals he scored at Spurs. Good Lord.
This was a real... it's funny. I never thought of Paul Scholes as really, like, a great goal scorer. But, oh, my God.
Did they show the goal against Bradford?
Yeah.
On the full volley.
Oh.
That was, show is awesome.
Neville's great.
He really is.
He's really, really fun on that
God,
show. let's see. And then finally, Sunday, 11:30 a.m., Newport County and Leicester City. Newport County are 12th in League Two. I don't actually have any kind of fun tidbit on them.
Newport County, they're Welsh.
They are, South Wales.
They fell out of the Football League for a while, too.
Well, they're back. They are back.
And didn't,
they are getting dug
Spurs,
back.
Spurs played there last season, I believe.
Okay. I'll tell you, honestly, I don't remember.
I was rooting for Newport Hired.
Sure,
so.
as you should have been. Oh!
Red card.
Yeah. What do you got?
It's a tweet. I feel like I'm catching up with tweets from our listeners, and it's made its way in. And it's not you, Philip Jones. Atzio Sarcopod, I'd love to hear some discussion about the madness surrounding Italian football right now. Racism targeted towards Koulibaly, a dead fan, and another fan stabbed all in the last week. Imagine the scenes if this had happened at an American sporting event.
Oh my God, seriously.
So that was Napoli and Inter, or Inter-Napoli, which descended into abuse from the stands from Inter fans for Napoli's Koulibaly. And Napoli coach Carlo Ancelotti said the next time a member of his team is racially abused, he'd be happy for the Serie A side to stop playing. And it was pretty awful. And we're asked to comment on this, and it's not been a particularly good period for this kind of incident, not just in Italy.
Yes.
There was an incident at the Edinburgh Derby. A man has been arrested, a Hibs fan, for racially abusing a black Hearts player. And of course we had that incident at Chelsea recently. So I don't know. I mean, imagine the scenes if this happened at an American sporting event. There's racism in American life. It doesn't have to be at a sporting event. And I think that's the key thing to understand with this. There are certain people right now who feel extremely emboldened to say these reprehensible things. And now we're seeing it in the terraces again when we thought it had gone away. No, it's never gone away in Italy. It's been a constant problem. I don't know how many times this podcast reports on something from Italy mm-hmm. on a regular basis. I don't know what your thoughts are on it. I mean, there was a lot of suggestions that the referee should have stopped the game. According to Serie A officials, that's not within his gift to do that. It's only the police can do that because there's a public safety concern about emptying a stadium just like that, that it could escalate a situation.
Yeah, which I could see why they would think that way. I mean, look, I don't know. This is a generational problem. Like, this isn't an issue that I think gets solved overnight. It isn't solved in general culture, so why should sports culture sadly be any different?
I've
always kind of felt that it is incumbent sometimes on other fans to let, you know, if somebody is saying something that is offensive and that, you know, is not a part of your belief system in any way, I think fans need to let fans know that it's not okay. And I've talked about, you know, getting in touch with stadium security. If stadiums offer text messaging that you can anonymously text to report a fan, you know, that stuff needs to be known. Teams need to make sure that fans are aware of that if they're not comfortable with something that's happening around them. There was a Chelsea incident also. A Chelsea supporter has now been banned from attending games for 3 years for shouting homophobic abuse. George Bradley pleaded guilty at Brighton Magistrates Court to the charge of using threatening, abusive, or insulting behavior to cause harassment, alarm, or distress. He was thrown out of Chelsea's game at Brighton on December 16th, 20-year-old guy. I mean, like, this stuff needs to happen. I don't know how else to stop it other than just, you know, this kind of enforcement.
Now, there has been sanctions taken against Inter as well. We should point out that that will happen, but
they're playing behind closed doors?
Yes.
Yeah.
For two games.
Yep.
I don't know what else to say other than that it's disgusting.
Awful. How many red cards over the course of this podcast have we devoted to this? You're right, it's crazy.
But I will say, I do take issue with imagine the scenes if this happened at an American sporting event. We have problems in this country. It doesn't have to be sport, and I think that's key to answering.
You mentioned
it.
A stabbing before?
Yeah. There was a fan stabbed, apparently, as
that
well.
That would be a pretty big deal, I think, if it happened here.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of just dealing with one awful thing at the time,
yeah.
Which is the racism. I don't know. It's wrong to say I'm sick talking about it, because you must confront these things, but it is depressing.
Yeah, it sure is. JJ, my red card is to Neil Warnock.
Neil Warnock's got to be up there with... He's a regular red card kind of guy.
This guy is just like... I'm just so over this guy. I've just had it with him. I've had it with him. Now, look, everyone has had their say. I'm being sensitive, Andy, here. But hear me out. Everyone's had their say on the Tottenham Stadium situation, so why not him? Let's throw him into the mix.
Warnock!
Now, here's the thing. I want you to tell me if what he's saying makes sense to you. And if it does, I will rescind this red card. But I just want one favor from you. Be honest. Don't just go against me because you think it's fun.
And I love Colin.
All right. Here's what Warnock said. The league should enforce Spurs, to play at Wembley now for the rest of the season. I don't think there should be any chance of an advantage to any of our opponents. It's not our fault. We should have been playing at the new stadium ourselves. I think they, the league, should step in now. It should be until the end of the season now. I think they should enforce it. It undermines the integrity of the competition. So what he's saying is... that their relegation rivals, when Tottenham moves into their new stadium later this season, will have an advantage that they did not have. How? Explain that to me. The attendance for most Tottenham matches at Wembley is capped at 51,000. At the new stadium, it'll be over 62,000.
Okay.
Mauricio Pochettino said this about Wembley just a week ago. That is why when I, this is a quote from him. That is why when I asked before, do you want to move? I say, of course, as soon as possible, because it's going to be a massive boost for the team and for our fans. It's going to be a place where the fans can help the team to achieve what we want. Am I missing something, JJ? The advantage is to you who got to play them at Wembley, which they don't even view as their home. They view themselves as playing road games every week of the season.
By the way, people think he looks like Livia Soprano.
Has he gone
Tony
crazy?
Soprano's mother.
Like, is he okay? How is the advantage to these teams who will have to play Tottenham in what? Like, Spurs fans are desperate to get in there. They're done with Wembley. They think it's a sterile environment. All the empty seats because they cap attendance at 51,000. It's like an abandoned warehouse. This new place, say what you want about it not being White Hart Lane. You're right. It's going to be different. But fans are so excited to have a place of their own. It's going to be a cauldron. It's not going to be easy for Newcastle to go in there late in the season. What is he talking about? Like, I read that. I had to read it three times. I was like, wait, is he, like, confused? Is he like,
he's not confused. It's so obtuse. It's such an obtuse argument to make. By the way, this was after a game in Cardiff.
They got hammered. The game was over in 25 minutes. It doesn't matter where they're playing. He's like, this is so weird. I'm sorry.
He's turning into, I mean, he was always a weird old man, like a curmudgeon.
Does he have something against?
He loves winding people
does
up.
Does he have a thing against Tottenham? Before the match, he said, like, I'm instructing my players not to breathe on them in the box. He said that. What's his deal?
Oh, he's old school. He is from the north. You are from the south. Oh, them southern softies coming up here. Coming up to the north. Well, actually, coming across to South Wales.
I don't know, man. Like, maybe I'm missing something. So
nah, and Warnock's always been like that.
This is so weird.
I want you to watch the Sheffield United documentary that was on Sky. It's on YouTube. I've talked about it before. Warnock.
Okay.
Just watch it. It's from about 12, 13
but
years ago.
But he, like, makes me angry now. I don't need that. I don't need this guy.
No, I think you'd hate him even more.
Well, yeah, that I agree with.
But he even used to, at full time at games, he used to wander on and say things to the opposition to wind them up. There's a classic example. So they've just beaten Millwall, at Millwall. Jody Morris, the Millwall midfielder's coming off, and there'd been a fracas with Kevin Muscat and some of the Sheffield United players, and he's walking off and he goes, you deserve that because of what Muscat's at. And Jody Morris goes, what? You deserve it. You know, I was just saying you deserve it because of what Muscat did. Why are you saying it to Jody Morris? Let him walk off the field.
That's pretty funny.
Stop trying to wind him up.
Yeah. Real quick, before we get to our man of the match, JJ, I should actually give one more
red card.
It was on the screen all along. I just didn't see it.
Oh.
So I'll take a red card for that.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
And what do you got?
Speaking of Sheffield United, Billy Sharp. Here's a guy we don't talk about very much, and we really should. He set a new record in English football at the weekend. He was on target for the fifth time in four games to help Sheffield United to victory at Wigan, and in the process become the leading goalscorer in English league football this century.
Hmm.
The leading goalscorer in English league football this century. The 32-year-old took his tally to 220 since making his debut in 2004. One goal more than former Southampton and England striker Ricky Lambert.
What?
This
not,
is,
wouldn't have been my guess.
No, right. This is an illustrious list mixed with not so illustrious guys. So Billy Sharp, English League football, by the way, is the four divisions.
Right, right.
Well, you need to make it clear for people because sometimes it's confusing to you Americans.
Wow. You mean that.
That is like, so rude.
You meant it, though.
No, I meant...
Look, it's fine. I understand that we have soccer pea brains. We don't get any of those.
No. I was jesting. So the top goal scorers in English football this century. Number one is Billy Sharp. Incredible. Two, Ricky Lambert. Three, Wayne Rooney.
He would have been my guess for one.
Four, Jermaine Defoe. Five, Frank Lampard. Six, Sergio Aguero. And seven, Harry Kane, who... considering his age at 121 goals is scoring quite the pelt.
Yeah.
Billy Sharp.
And Ricky Lambert.
Mm.
What an incredible top two.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So those guys are the illustrious company that is now topped by Sir Billy of Sharp, who I will hope be knighted in the Queen's Honours list next year.
Let's see. My man of the match, JJ, goes to Thiago Sterling. I watched a video the other day of Raheem Sterling's one-year-old son, Thiago, playing soccer in their house, and I was blown away by it.
His technique is so much better than yours.
Honestly, truly. And I don't even take that as an insult. That's
by the way, the way his running is
his
really
run up,
good.
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's mainly a visual, but like you can kind of hear.
Goal!
That's Raheem.
Did you see him? Did you see the moment where he traps the ball, like he controls it and puts his foot on top of
it? It's coming, you'll hear it kind of.
Yeah. Put your foot on it. Good boy. And then poof. There we go. That's all I'm talking about. Give me some of that, man. Give me some of that.
By the way, breaking news. Adopt me, Raheem Sterling. Like, how can you watch that video and not just smile? Oh, he looks like the best. I love him. What a dad. Father of the year.
Why are you making this creepy? Adopt me, Raheem
Sterling. Yeah, I want
Sterling.
Him to adopt me. I want him to love me the way that he appears to love Thiago in those clips.
Oh, God. I have visions of you now running around in a nappy, kicking balls around a mansion in Manchester.
Just like, I thought it was great. I just like so enjoyed watching it. Him with his son, hugging him. Come celebrate with me. Oh, it was beautiful. Thiago's the man of the match, but Raheem, if you're listening, come and get me.
I can't wait for the Daily Mail headline for this.
Well, I'm also
neglectful parent Raheem Sterling allows child to run in house. What has world come to? Neglectful parent Raheem Sterling leaves topless child in video. They'll find a way.
No, they won't. Not on this one.
They
Raheem
can't.
Sterling looks like just an awesome dad. I just enjoyed it.
It is impossible to watch that video and a smile start creeping across
your
face.
It.
I was at home. Now, that's a one-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at home with my niece, who is 2.5. Her technique is terrible.
Yeah.
It's so disappointing.
It's a problem. You were embarrassed.
She can't trap it. Her crossfield pass is dreadful. She's poor. She's a poor player. And she announces when the poo is coming.
Speaking of which, I just got note actually earlier today that Jack pooped on the potty. And that is a first.
Ooh.
So we are celebrating. Yeah, that's a big deal in the Gunling household.
That is huge.
Yeah. You know what else is huge? The length of this podcast. I don't even know what to say. If you're still listening, I apologize for infecting your day the way that we have with so much content. We also have another podcast out. I don't even know if you have time to listen, but if you do, it would be appreciated.
Stop groveling. We have an excellent... Here, I'm taking this from here on in. Okay. We have an excellent podcast with Grant Wall, which completely sets you up for the year in U.S. soccer that is ahead, 2019. And we talk about all aspects of it. He's excellent. He gives his insight on Christian Pulisic. It's so good. And also what you should do, if you've got to the end of this podcast, which Andrew doesn't believe you have, we have a target. Well, I have a target. We need to get to 1,000 reviews on iTunes.
And then what?
Just we'll pop the bottles. We'll celebrate like it's 1999.
Well, this...
So if you can go and leave us a review, that would be awesome, guys.
Well,
but by the way,
people
are crying out for more content from us, and you refuse to deliver. And when you
I refuse to deliver, I'm sitting here, aren't I?
And when you finally do, you just moan about it.
No, it's because it's me. I feel like I'm imposing. I feel bad. It's too much. I know people, and I know they look at how long this podcast was when they downloaded it, and they rolled their eyes. Oh, I can't be bothered. I know that.
Your ideal push notification system on people's phones for this podcast would be your head popping up and going, it's pretty long, and you don't probably want to listen. But if you click on my face now, you can listen to the podcast. But you know, don't go to any trouble.
You know me so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Forget it. and then you'll disappear.
You're right. You're right. Well, hey, this was fun. I hope it was at least a little therapeutic for you. More soccer action this weekend with the magic of the FA Cup. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.